This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And hello, Hearts of Oak. Welcome to another interview coming up in a moment with Debbie Georgiadis. Debbie, I met back in 2018 in Texas, and we reconnected at the Counter for National Policy Conference in Miami in February. Debbie is the host of America Can We Talk, a talk show, radio, and on video. I've loved watching many of her interviews, and I asked her on to discuss U.S. exceptionalism. What has happened to American exceptionalism? And we go into, obviously, introducing her show, the many guests she's had on, what she's trying to do with that. And then we move on to America used to be America alone, but is now America and China, America and globalism, America and the Middle East, that clash between Christianity and Islam. And then we end up looking at the Durham report that she has just done quite a bit of work on. It seems as though the whole Russian collusion was a hoax. Who would have thought? That's just broken, just come out. And those 2 years of attacks on Trump in his first 2 years as president were simply a way of smearing and destroying him. And there was no truth in it. That's all come out. And Debbie has covered this in depth. And it was wonderful for her to go into that and explain to us, the viewers and listeners, what exactly has come out. So love chatting to Debbie. You catch her on AmericaCanWeTalk.org. I know you'll love hearing from her, unpack these issues of U.S. exceptionalism. And hello, Hearts of Oak. It is wonderful to have today with us the host for America Can We Talk and founder and moderator of Women for Freedom Summits, and that is Debbie Georgiadis. Debbie, thank you for your time today.
Hi, Peter. I'm grateful you invited me to join you, and I loved having you on my show last week.
It was good fun being with you last week. It was good. Goodness, we met each other 2018 and hadn't seen each other since. So it was good bumping into you at CNP in Miami in February. And it was great to be on your show. So thank you for joining us. And lots to discuss, as always. Obviously, on the screen, AmericaCanWeTalk.org, and on Twitter at Debbie Can We Talk. All the links will be in the description for everyone to follow. But before we jump in and look at, I think we want to talk about America Can We Talk, what has happened to U.S. exceptionalism. And it's a massive topic of America, I guess, moving away from its position in the world. But before we get on to that, before we get on to your show, before we get on to all the topics, can I ask you, Debbie, just to take a moment and introduce yourself for our probably 70% UK audience and 20% US. So take a moment and introduce yourself before we go on to your show and then onto the topic.
Thank you for that opportunity, Peter. I would love to. My name is Debbie Georgiadis, and you know, I'm based now in Dallas, Texas. Our talk show's out of Dallas, Texas. But by way of quick background, I grew up in upstate New York, and I'm a lawyer. I went to law school, did all my schooling back east, and used to be a litigator in California, defended businesses and employment disputes. And so I was mostly on the defense in employment-related cases. And we came to Texas in the year 2000. My husband and I moved here because of his work in startup companies. And you know, when I got to Texas, we had three kids at home. I did the stay-at-home mom thing. But pretty early on, I got involved in here it was called Republican Women's Club. It's just a bunch of women who got together and talked about political issues. And I enjoyed it very much. And they had good speakers. But my thought always was, as I'm listening, you know, I love learning, but what do you do with it? And how do you be an activist? How do you do more than just learn important things and go home and tell your husband at dinner? Like, what do you do about it? And so, and I also focus a lot on how women vote. And, you know, I am in America, our political parties, pretty much we still have two, Republican and Democrat. And Republicans are more the patriots, the people who believe in the Constitution and the ideas, the Declaration of Independence. So anyway, I began studying women's voting patterns and realized how women tend to vote for big government. They vote for expansion of government. because they are lulled or lured in by the idea of sympathy for the less fortunate. And so the best solution is big government and handout programs. And they also vote that way because they are, in my opinion, duped or tricked into thinking that somehow the leftists in America are going to make life safer and fairer and better for minorities. So I wrote a book. I wrote a book in 2012, I think it was, called Ladies, Can We Talk? And I just talked to women about, you know, how you vote and what's the outcome of that vote. What happens when you vote for expanded government and expanded government control over society? It was a little bit wonky. I'm the first to admit it, pretty wonky. Lots of you know, footnotes and details and data and charts and graphs, just trying to make the point, you know, don't vote away America. Don't vote away freedom. And really from that book and some media interviews I got after that, it just kind of morphed and rolled into having a talk show. So I had a talk show on radio called Ladies, Can We Talk? On a big network here in America for 4.5 years. And then actually it was Salem Radio. And then the head of one of the board members of Salem said to me at some conference. You're losing half your audience. You should be calling your shows to preserve America's freedom.
Okay, well, lots of discussion. I've loved watching a number of your most, I think your most recent interview was Dr. Simone Gold. You had a replay of Frank Gaffney interview, and I've seen you put up the Reawaken America event from Trump Doral Hotel in Miami, where we met again. Maybe you want to tell us about some of your guests and what you're trying to put out.
I would love to. You know, part of what happened when my husband and I moved to Texas in the year 2000 is became very politically active. And so we happened to have in the home where our kids grew up, we had a back house, which was large. It was a pool house, but we turned it into a meeting venue. So we had many, we would invite conservatives who are activists, candidates, elected officials, foundations, organizations, people with a conservative cause tied to saving America. So we hosted hundreds of events in our home. And it was just a way to let people, it was a private venue, and people could come and talk more freely about the serious challenges facing America and what was really the root of those challenges. So we did that for many years. And I worked on political campaigns, trying to talk about messaging and how you need to collapse down the big arguments that conservatives make into bullet points. And so I worked with candidates, elected officials. The bottom line was we met a lot of people. So when I started doing my talk show, I already had a pretty big array of at least contacts and friends. You mentioned Frank Gaffney. He's been on the show many times. And actually, he was the founder of Center for Security Policy. And all he studies and thinks about is the various ways in which America's national security is threatened. So he's really an ideological thinker. So he talks not just about some country being a military threat, but the ideologies that come into America and undermine our understanding of America. So he knows a lot about China and Russia, et cetera. I also have had guests in the kind of social issues sphere. I had a woman on my show 4 weeks ago, I think, no, 3 weeks ago, named Riley Gaines. And she really, I think, has made international popularity. She's a star swimmer, a young woman who won, like, I think when she was 16, ranked first in the nation, an amazing swimmer, went to University of Kentucky and won all sorts of events. And her final NCAA, which is the end of the college time for her in her swimming competition, she was beat out by a guy who got to swim against the women because he said, you know, I identify as a woman. I mean, it just preposterous, crazy. And that whole transgender craziness has really overtaken America. So I try to talk about that, how it undermines our culture, our family, and just undermines this rooting in truth because he's a guy in every way. And so I have those kind of guests. I am going to be talking. Sure, I have many guests talking about the border situation in America. We live in Texas. The southern border is, you know, a few hundred miles away and is utterly unenforced. Don't let anyone tell you it's just a few little openings. It's utterly unenforced. We are watching an enabled, legitimized invasion of our southern border, enabled by our own government. That's what happened. So anyway, I've known lots of people who are politically active, candidates and such, but I want to avoid slogan slinging, because I think too many people get turned off in politics if you just sling slogans or name call. I have serious substantive discussions rooted in facts and data and try to introduce people to the deeper ideas about what makes America great, unique, extraordinary.
Well, I love watching many of them, and of yours, if they haven't caught up with them, they can on AmericaCanWeTalk.org. They're all available there to watch, and all the links, Rumble links, everything else is in the description. But there are a whole load. I mean, I grew up with two superpowers, America and Russia, USSR. And then America seemed to take the supremacy, the upper hand, and was the single superpower in the world. And we've had that up to probably recently. But then recently we've seen the ascendancy of China. And it's an interesting clash. This, not just America alone, but America and China. What are your thoughts on that? As you see kind of that competition, that replacement with, I guess, America and its values of freedom, of liberty, of the ability to make the best in your life. Anyone can achieve what they want to if they really believe in it. That's the American dream. And what China brings is something very different. I mean, as an American, what are your thoughts on that clash between two separate, I guess, ideologies?
Well, first of all, Peter, I would say I would love if more Americans saw it as a clash. That would be very helpful. You know, you're exactly right. What has happened in America, unseen really by many people, but exposed by Frank Gaffney and many other people who are national security experts, is the idea that China has committed to itself. In fact, they had at their very large annual party meeting in 2009, I think it was, promising that they intend to become the world's single superpower. It was 1999, because 50 years later, going to be by 2049. They intend to be the world's single superpower. And so they really have a goal of not just equaling America in military strength or manufacturing or standard of living. It's nothing like that. It is an agenda to really take, to be in charge of the world, to dominate America and all other countries. And so there's that piece of it is coming out of China. It is the ideology of the Chinese Communist Party itself, believing communism must be spread. And there's also an element in China of an ancient doctrine that the current leader, Xi Jinping, believes in, which is the idea that the Chinese people as a race, as an ethnicity, are really intended to be the rulers of the world. The English version of it is called mandate from heaven. But they really think this. And Xi Jinping says it in his speeches. So China has that agenda. And in some ways, you can see the agenda and what they try to do. But in many ways, what they're doing to take down America, diminish America's role, is more subtle. And it is, you have to pay attention to what the experts are teaching you to really understand what they're doing. One more little background is back in 1998, there was a book published by two Chinese generals, high-level military in the Chinese in the military in China, that basically said, here's our plan. Here's how we will take down America. And they spell it out. We weren't intended to see it, but they spell it out. And a lot of it is very subtle. So the methods they're using, they are very much trying to undermine America, the culture and our belief in ourselves. So they're spreading through Confucius Institutes at college campuses, as well as many recruited people in America's government, in the judiciary, in Hollywood, in all the places where influencers seem to abide. They are trying to culturally bring down America. It's really to convince the American people that your country isn't as great as you think it is. And within academia, especially, and people are just kind of now waking up to this, maybe in the last 5 years, waking up to this, the ideology of communism has become the dominant ideology in almost every university in America, in the history departments, political science departments. So you send your sweet young child off to college thinking they're going to get really smart because they're going to, you know, learn great things like universities used to do. And what they are producing, America's universities, through the influence of China and more broadly the communist ideology, they're producing students who emerge from college and they don't They not only don't like America, they don't love America, they don't like America. They think America is bad. They have an impression of America's history, utterly unconnected to reality. And they believe and they will spout how communism or socialism is so much better and so much more fair and so much more just, and capitalism is evil. So we have a generation of people coming out of universities that don't even know who's been hoodwinking them or brainwashing them. They think they went and got educated, and then they think their parents, who don't agree with what they're saying, must be old school, dark, ignorant. So you have that aspect of the kind of cultural takeover of America. You have financial takeover of America coming out of China. We have Chinese corporations listed on the stock exchanges in America, and far too complicated for this show, but I've done shows about it, how when Chinese companies are in the stock exchanges in America, and many of the funds in America allow, you know, you have collections of people, retirement accounts of people's money, and they invest in funds. So that money goes back to strengthen Chinese corporations. There were a series of three laws in China passed, was like 2017, 18, and 19, that basically made it the law in China. Every company in China, no matter what they make, what they do, who they are, they're all obligated to give every bit of information about their customers, about their company, everything they do, to the Chinese Communist Party. And they do. And so you have, as the point people try to make, you have American military people who serve their whole life, who have retirement funds into Chinese companies and America's stock exchange to go to Chinese companies who are manufacturing the weapons who will kill America's military. I mean, it is the most extraordinary thing. And convincing people China is an enemy, China is America's number one enemy, is hard, because people were taught for years that the whole idea is kind of similar to detente, but, you know, we're going to make friends, we're going to expand this relationship, and not realizing China really is America's number one and really the world's number one mortal threat to the future of freedom.
Well, I want to get on that economic threat and that, I guess, credit system, which is controlling people across the West now. But I guess it's that ideology, let me touch on first, because here in Europe, you go to Eastern Europe and you talk to many people and they remember what communism was like behind the Iron Curtain. America doesn't have that. And America is built on, during the Cold War, of course, there was that threat of communism from the USSR, from Russia, and Americans understood that that was against, that was detrimental to the whole American dream. That Cold War has gone to an extent. And the worry is, I guess, that young people growing up now, they have no idea of the damage to communism. They have no idea of the threat of socialism. What's it currently like in America? Because that seems to, people don't seem to look on communism, socialism with such suspicion, but it's more out of curiosity now, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I'm in the era where we grew up speaking about, you know, the communist world was Russia and the countries they occupied. And we all spoke of America as the free world. It was just understood without really needing much explanation. We understood communism involved tyranny, and involved government control of all of society. And in America, we saw that as an enemy. And it is part of this ideological invasion that we were talking about a minute ago. You do have more people. It isn't that they would, I don't think there's a huge majority of Americans who would say, yes, I'm in favor of socialism. I think communism is great. There's a segment, and sadly a growing segment, that says they like socialism, but what they don't see are the ideas that are coming out of America's left. They are Marxist. It's Marxist by slow rolling, changing the way America thinks about things, changing the way what we appreciate and think about our sense of freedom in our country. So we are succumbing to socialism, Marxism, communism by a slow rolling attack. And just a couple of quick examples. There is a bill now in our Congress. Now, the sponsor of it is Bernie Sanders, who was a presidential candidate, who's an avowed, he's a communist. But he's got a bill that is saying, and he's got he's in the Senate. The House side is sponsored by the member of Congress we often call AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They're basically saying that the government should pay for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a snack So it's three meals a day plus a snack for every student in America. It's not means tested. It's not that, you know, poor students who may be starving, but they sell it as a way. I've been reading their propaganda. They sell it as a way as how can a child be expected to learn if they're hungry, which of course they can't. I mean, everyone, you know, you're adults. We can't focus if we're really hungry. So you make the point, well, look what we've just got to take care of that. Look, we can solve this. And they always spout off big numbers. America's a rich country. We have, you know, X number of millionaires and billionaires and all this money sitting around. Well, the fact is that is a massive step toward communist control over society, disguised as kindness and charity. And this is one of the points, even in my book, you know, now over 10 years ago, I was trying to make social programs intentionally engender dependency. They teach you that it's kindness to provide larger and larger social programs. And the result is, of course, that the average person, especially someone who grew up dependent on all sorts of government programs, doesn't even see that as abnormal. They don't see it as, well, I'm an exception. I really should be self-sufficient, have a job, you know, take care of myself. They see that's what life is. So they are cultivating the culture of dependency still today in America. And it's a form of how socialism takes over. It's not and you know, COVID was a huge other problem. COVID was a time where we subconsciously agreed that the government could control a lot of our lives. They could decide whether you can leave your home and whether you have to wear a mask and whether you can open your business. And I mean, it was just used as a vehicle, a mental manipulation, or people were calling it mass psychosis of America. Fear was instilled. People felt afraid. So they just waited to be told what to do. And very few said, you know, something about this isn't right. Climate change is used the same way. It instills fear. It instills dependency. It instills weakness. People are encouraged not to think. Just wait to be told what to do, and then we'll keep you safe. And that's how you lose your freedom.
American child, but American globalism and that economic power. And I know President Trump attempted to try and bring back some of the manufacturing to the U.S. that had been given away. But it seems as though that globalism reduces America's position in the world economically and makes America reliant on other countries, where America was self-sufficient for so long, as was Britain many, many years ago. But that move away, that globalization, and that, I guess, selling off America to the highest bidder, which seems to be more and more the Democrat policy, and America can't do it any better, someone else can, and they can always do it cheaper. And that giving up of that American economic power. I mean, how do you view that? Because that's partially China rising up, I guess, and becoming the engine power of the world. But there are many other countries stepping into that as America seems to withdraw from it.
Absolutely. I'm so glad I was making notes while you were talking. I think better if I'm taking notes. I will say, I do think that, you know, we were talking a minute ago about how these ideas are introduced in society and they're sold to you as either it's uplifting or it's the new way to think. It's modern way. It's not this old fashioned way that your grandfather used to think. These are new ideas. And globalization is sold as a next modern step among thinking people. And, you know, the word can mean many things. I mean, the concept that America and the entire world, we have global trade, we have products that grow certain places, made certain places. And so shipping and having trade and, you know, buying products from each other, generally speaking, or in the abstract, is a great idea. You know, you don't want to shut yourself off from the world. You have connections if you purchase products from other countries. What happened in America was, and it was very intentional during the Obama years, Obama, and I think your listeners probably know, but Obama, his vice president was Biden, who is now our president. So this is, many people refer to the Biden presidency as Obama's third term, as more Obama ideology. But the short story is they sold globalization as a way to be more enlightened. And so we're going to globalize, and they tied it into World Economic Forum. And isn't this wonderful? We're all going to work together for the betterment of all mankind. And so we're going to find better ways to solve the world's problems. And lots of people say, well, who could be against that? That sounds good. What has become obvious is the World Economic Forum is part of the agenda to really minimize and eventually eliminate the notion of sovereign states that are self-sufficient. And the idea of the World Economic Forum is, and their motive, their MO, their modus operandi is to use dangers or threats or concerns to monopolize power, to grow, to have countries surrender their power to the World Economic Forum, who promises, just like every communist since time began, promises, give us all the power, give us all your money, we'll fix everything. And that's really, so the World Economic Forum made a lot of headway in America. Many prominent American leaders and people who are, you know, in the government now attend, and they would say, oh, it's just a way to have conversations. But again, it's that creeping, an important differentiation. Are they just sharing information, and or are they working toward this one global government idea, which has been the dream of many leftists for years and years? A similar, and in America, more people are starting to call that out, saying, you know, we don't want World Economic Forum dictating anything about our climate policy, our COVID policy. And it was both, you know, Klaus Schwab, the head of World Economic Forum, he writes about, he doesn't even hide it. He talks about the idea. Yeah, we're going to use climate change. And then he had a whole other series. We're going to use COVID to essentially consolidate power in this international body, take countries that thought they were sovereign and had their own policies and plans. We're not having anything of that. We're just not going to allow that. And I don't want, you know, Peter, I want to be mindful of your time. The other one, quick one I want to mention was the World Health Organization is another one where they are, you know, first of all, controlled by China, number one, is not a freestanding, really lovely organization working toward better world health. It is run by a guy who is a former Muslim terrorist and not a doctor. He's not even a medical doctor. He is a, you know, he's a bad actor. He runs that organization, and countries around the world are signing on to say, we'll let the World Health Organization take our sovereignty away and let them be the ones that decide when a pandemic should be declared, how we should react, what vaccines should be required. We are giving away sovereignty. But I will say, I realize I'm sounding negative, so I do want to get to the point. There are a lot of Americans wide awake now for the first time in a long time. I was thinking driving in, all these organizations reach out to me. I'd love to be on your show. I want to talk about what we're doing. People are waking up. They're recognizing this creeping loss of freedom, loss of America, loss of America's greatness is it's right around the corner, if not already here. And so you need the people who understand what's happening to rise up and stand up for what America is.
And people are awakening up to that threat in the WEF and the WHO meeting at the end of this month and the controls they will bring on countries. And I saw they've refused Taiwan again to be observer status. Again, the power of China. We all see that in many ways. But could I touch another area? Because you've got, again, American exceptionalism has been taken over by America and the Middle East, and this is partially a clash between a weak Christianity in America and a strong Islam in the Middle East. And this is a clash that we have seen across Europe, and I know that you will see more and more in America, and that's connected to immigration. But you see this clash between two powerhouses, and Christianity seems to be weak in its ability to hold its ground and know what it believes, and Islam seems to come in. And then you've got the financial side of the Middle East. You've got the oil, you've got everything that backs that up. I mean, what are your thoughts on that clash, not only between Christianity in the West and Islam coming from the Middle East, but that America in the Middle East?
Do I have an hour to answer this? On a very serious note.
We can do that on part B, the next show.
Okay. On a very serious note, you know, every time there's a really bad event in America, there have been jihadist attacks in America. They had the Boston Marathon. We had one right here at Fort Hood, which is a military installation. We've had Islamic attacks in America. We have jihadist attacks, and we've had stories about, you know, a dad doing honor killing of his own child. So we've had these, and every time those happen, people kind of wake up again. They say, wow, this Islam, the teachings of Islam, at least those who follow what the Quran actually says, these are ideas are inconsistent with America and freedom and Christianity. And but yet, you know, when it's quiet, nothing happens. People kind of revert to their, well, you know, we're a diverse nation and we want to embrace everyone and we're all about inclusivity, blah, blah, blah. Very little sustained attention to that the Islamic jihadist movement in this world, it never ends. It started with the writing of the Quran. It started with Muhammad, and it goes on and has gone on since the time the Quran was unleashed on the world. And so we have this movement in America that sadly doesn't pay attention until it's really late, really very late. And then related to that, many people have been documenting, there has been, I mean, it sounds like strange bedfellows, but there has been a locking of arms between the Marxist movement in America, which is definitely on the rampage, and the Islamic jihadist movement, also on the rampage, and the two of them locking arms together, and they kind of can bond over their perception that they are victims, they're a minority, they're not treated fairly, they're not honored. But really, it's a very dangerous alliance, and it's front and center in America today. And people are a little bit afraid to call it out. You have to wait till an event happens and then try to remind people, you know, this is why these are happening. These aren't just people who deviated from Islamic doctrine, deviated from the Quran. These are people who are following the Quran, who are committing these kind of actions. So yeah, and then your related point about Christianity in America. There's a great thinker in America. I think you probably know of him, but Trevor Loudon. He's actually a New Zealand native, and he's coming back to Texas in a few weeks and be on the show. But he writes about the essentially a communist takeover of the world. That's his whole point, is watching, is tracking communists. And he did a film 2 or 3 years ago called Enemies Within the Church. And his entire point of the film was that the Marxist movement coming to America, trying to identify all the places of weakness, also chose the Christian Church of America, and how you have Christian churches off on teaching about social justice warrior stuff, left-wing policies on every conceivable issue, inclusivity, which causes them eventually to lose the Gospels, to lose the core of Christianity, what Christianity means and teaches. Like, their highest idea of Christianity is to say, we have no beliefs, we don't really have any beliefs. Everything goes, anything goes. And the church in America is weakened because of that. Having said that, again, this rising love for freedom, you see it in America. You do see it and hear more people speaking about, and people put it on social media, I want to find a church that is not sucked into social justice and welfare, the, you know, social justice agenda. I want a church that teaches the Gospels, that holds to the Gospels. And you see people actually talking about, and I agree with both of these points, you want to find churches, Christian churches, that actually understand America's unique identity was born of, it came out of the Scriptures. The idea of man having individual rights from God because you were born, at the very least, to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness and many other things, the equality of all men. The ideas of America are the ideas of the Scriptures, of the Judeo-Christian Scriptures, and people want to find churches that will say so.
I know we're going on lots of topics, but I do think there, I just want to give our viewers and listeners a taster, because there are all these, I guess, from different angles, and that destruction of American exceptionalism. And I want to talk about immigration, but I do want, and I know you've covered this recently in your show, and this is on the Durham report, because this is a clash between, I guess, America and the FBI, American, what's happening internally. All the other things we've talked about are external threats, but yet you also have internal threats, which are actually probably more concerning, because those internal threats are accepted as good and positive for the country. Unpack that again to a non-US audience of what the Durham report has unveiled to the US people. I know it's not possible to do in a short space of time, but I think it's essential for our viewers to just scratch a little bit to see what exactly that is unveiling.
I'd be so happy to. So everyone in the world, I think, heard when President Trump came along, he ran for presidency in 2015 and 2016. He won in 2016. And early on in his candidacy, in his campaign, a story emerged out of Washington that somehow Russia was colluding with President Trump to steal the election from Hillary Clinton. And she was the Democrat, the leftist candidate. And this Trump-Russia collusion, as it turned out to be, hoax, really took hold in the media in America. And so we spent, it continued during the campaign after Trump won. He's in office the first 2.5+ years while he was in office. His investigation was ongoing. Our American so-called Justice Department, the DOJ, Department of Justice, was investigating the FBI, which is a bureau part of the DOJ. The FBI is a Federal Bureau of Investigation. They spent millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of hours investigating supposed Trump-Russia collusion. Finally, the Democrats, who are orchestrating the whole thing, the DOJ, announced, you know, actually, there's nothing to this at all. After a thorough investigation, there was no Trump-Russia collusion. Sorry, our bad, didn't happen. And so then there was a report, there was an investigation ordered by a guy named Durham, and he's an attorney with the DOJ, and he was appointed to investigate where in the world, since there was no Trump-Russia collusion, nothing to it, where did it come from? How did this get started? And he reported finally last week, he released his report, 306 pages. I'm not through it all, but I will. But I will tell you that one thing he had to say, the top points, which are simply mind-blowing, one was there was no basis at all. That's what he concluded. There was no reason for the DOJ to even think that there was Trump-Russia collusion. There was nothing to it. I mentioned to you before we started today, Peter, that the British intelligence, when the DOJ shared the information with British intelligence and said, look, this is what we're looking into. We think that Trump colluded with the Russians. It was literally the, you know, kind of... It was a massive eye roll, an utter dismissal. The words were something like, this is it? That's what you're going to investigate? It was absurd. They literally, on paper, laughed at the DOJ for making this allegation. So they figured out early on, nothing to it. The Durham report points out there was nothing to it. It also points out that our president, Obama, along with Joe Biden, our current president, along with Hillary Clinton, along with the head of the CIA, John Brennan, and every other major player who orchestrated and continued this push for the Trump-Russia collusion investigation, they all knew as of October 2016 that it was all made up. And if you didn't know who it was made up by, they knew, and the American people have known for a long time, made up by Hillary Clinton herself. Hillary Clinton, the Democrat candidate for president, and her law firm Perkins Coie, and a smear campaign firm they hired, cooked up. It was a complete campaign stunt. That was what Trump-Russia collusion was. And Hillary Clinton, I have clips of her galore, you know, blathering on and on, complaining about Trump-Russia collusion, and she made it up. Her whole team made it up. So part of what is now occurring in America, the Durham report is, you know, obviously the DOJ is corruption at the highest levels. Not one DOJ attorney, not one FBI agent during the entire farce spoke up. No one said, you know, actually there's nothing to this. Actually, Hillary made this up. Actually, there's no evidence at all. No one did. And so there's great concern. And I support the idea that when we have sane people again running America, meaning a Republican-controlled House and Senate and White House, there needs to be an actual dismantling of the DOJ and FBI. Has to be done carefully. You can't have no federal law enforcement agencies, but they have massive weeding out as needed because this is a culture of corruption. It goes beyond just, I mean, this is a not just a culture of corruption, it's a culture of thinking their job as the top law enforcement agencies in America, their job is to go after the political opponent. That's what they thought their job was. And I know this happened. This investigation continued even when Donald Trump was president. But you have to understand, he can appoint the head of the agency. He made terrible choices in running those agencies. And those people were of the mindset as they had always been. They're leftists. They are pushing the leftist agenda, the Marxist agenda. Trump got in the way. Their mission from the time he came along was somehow find a way to destroy Trump. They're still doing it now in a variety of other investigations ongoing. But this was really, for many people, an eye-opening time. More people need to wake up and realize the depth of corruption that just permeated DOJ, FBI, CIA, NSA, all of these top agencies that we not only pay with our tax dollars, but we entrust them with the system of justice in this country. And what they're telling us is the system of justice, the rule of law, is utterly gone. They are a witch hunt mentality, persecuting their political opponents. It's the same thing happening to the January 6th defendants, probably a topic for another day, but same thing they're doing and going after the documents at Mar-a-Lago when Biden had far worse documents and no authority, no even arguable authority to have them, but nothing happens to him. There's a massive double standard. It's worse than double standard. It's a persecution of political opponents and an absolute whitewashing of anyone who is any wrongdoing, no matter what it is, if that person supports the leftist agenda in America.
I mean, is there a way through it? Because you talk about draining the swamp, and that's about the political system in Washington. But you've touched on the FBI and the institutions. Then you look at the media, you look at the court system. I mean, Kerry Lake's fighting there in Arizona, the whole issue of vote counting not being done properly. I mean, there are a range of issues. And I mean, what are your thoughts on, I guess it all boils down to a hatred and a fear of Trump, that he connects with people on a level that actually maybe America hasn't seen for quite a while, and strikes fear into the heart of the Democrats, and they will use any tactic to discredit him. Is there a way through using the system whenever seemingly so many parts of the system are set against Trump himself?
I'm sorry, you mean Trump getting back in the White House?
Yes, I mean, that clash, because we've discussed some of the FBI adamant on taking Trump down. We've seen the media. We've seen so many out. We've seen, obviously, the Twitter files beginning to come out. There's so many battles, and I wonder what your thoughts are on actually having a successful conclusion to a political vote system against all those different ideologies.
Peter, that is the famous $64,000 question. In fact, you know, I had people who are on my show will stay after and talk. And you mentioned recently the Clay Clark tour, the Reawaken tour. A common conversation essentially is, okay, we're all well informed. We understand, you know, Russia collusion was a hoax. The border's unenforced. COVID was a hoax in terms of the way it was imposed on people. And the common question people get is, well, who's going to be our leader? Who can be a leader to stand up, expose it all? And, you know, I do think the answer is Trump as to our presidential campaign. But really, there's no one person. This is, to my view, a groundswell of the American people demanding a return of the rule of law in our country, demanding a return to border and sovereignty, to individual liberty. There needs to be a massive groundswell, because there is no one person who's going to solve all these things. There are literally, I will tell you, I truly think a majority of Americans agree with most of what I'm saying. I think Americans know. Americans know our country is corrupt. Biden did not win in 2020. Everyone paying attention knows that. He didn't win the election. Trump won. The people overwhelmingly chose him, but they wouldn't let him govern. And so there's a groundswell that knows this. And I think you do hear people expressing concern more and more. What are we going to do to stop them? How can we make this leftist Marxist takedown stop? And I don't think, I mean, and obviously people get a little concerned about whether, yeah, you know, there would actually emerge within America a second civil war. And I hate that thought. And I always say we got to find better ways to do it. But there need to be brave American people deciding that absolutely, no matter what it takes, I will stand up in my school board and my community about critical race theory and the transgender lunacy. I'm going to insist that actual history of America is taught, that American patriotism is taught as part of teaching about America. The battles are at school boards. They are for election integrity. We have not just that Donald Trump's election was stolen in 2020, which is a whole other topic we could talk about sometime if you want, but there is massive election fraud in this country. So we have to have, just like in a real army where you send, you know, one unit has to go fight at this shore and one unit has to fight on, you know, wherever else it is at sea, and one unit is defending. We have to, as Americans, decide we're going to take back this country. We're going to stand up for it. And you got to find your lane and fight. It involves pressure on your elected officials. We in Texas, what Texas is often considered, you know, the leader of liberty in America, the most free state, the one that loves America and freedom. we could not get meaningful election integrity legislation passed in our legislature. So it takes massive citizen involvement. It takes elected officials afraid they won't get reelected, afraid that their money will be cut off. It is a massive, I mean, it took the left, whatever you want to call it, 80 or 100 years to get us to this point where America is at a tipping point. It's going to take a while, but I think the ideas of America are right. I think they are God-given rights from the very founding. And I think the American people do realize it, but it takes, we can't sit back and wait for the perfect politician to come along or the perfect leader of the movement. There are many, many people speaking up and doing things that matter. Get on board with the thing that you care about the most. As the presidential election, by the way, I think unless they have massive theft, Trump is going to win the primary. We have a primary, and I think he's going to win the general. And so I will ask people, I posed this at the close of my show yesterday with Simone Gold was on, who's a great American patriot. What happens in 2024 if it's, again, Trump versus Biden, and again, it's stolen, and then they announce, well, look at this. As a matter of fact, now we got 110 million votes for Biden, and everyone knows it isn't true. What's going to happen then? What will happen to America then? And if you don't like that picture, get in the fight now.
Debbie, I appreciate coming on. We don't even have time to talk about immigration or the whole education side on those school boards meetings that we have certainly watched with jealousy, I guess, in the UK, because we don't have that sort of thing. But I appreciate you coming on Monday to Thursday at 3 p.m. I can just remind us where people can find you and what they can find.
Thank you so very much. My website is AmericaCanWeTalk.org. We do run the show on the website, and that is the safest place to go, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. But we also put the show out on Rumble, which is at America Can We Talk. I think it says America Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiadis. We put it out on Twitter, and on Twitter, I'm at Debbie Can We Talk. It's on every conceivable social media platform that exists, including Truth Social. It's not on YouTube because sadly, I was permanently banned from YouTube for putting a doctor on the show who pointed out that ivermectin is really effective to deal with COVID. And so I am permanently banned on YouTube. And until someday that can be rectified, I won't be there. But I'm everywhere else you can look. And the show is called America Can We Talk. If you just start even typing in on your search bar, America Can We Talk, Debbie G, because you probably cannot pronounce my last name, which is Georgiadis, but Debbie G, it will come up. I'd love to have you listen, like the page, come to the page, read our blogs. I say it since I've been doing public speaking for 10 years, I love the American political conversation. It's part of the idea of freedom, that you can talk about issues and share facts and listen to other people. That's a robust idea, the First Amendment. And we need to reclaim that because among many other things happening in America, there is a very much censoring of freedom of speech in this country, which is utterly inconsistent with the idea of America.
Debbie, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts on American exceptionalism and sharing what people can find on American We Talk. So thank you so much.
Peter, thank you for having me. It's just great to see you. Great to be on your show. Thank you so much.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list, donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.